Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we'll tell you about an arrest involving a threat against a high school in East County and a warning from a school superintendent asking parents to check their teenagers' phones for a new app that's been tied to many school threats. We'll tell you about a heat wave set to warm up our region, and we'll have a report from the World Health Organization on what young people should know to protect against hearing loss. On Tribal Beat, hear about a flash mob protest against the Hamul Indian Village Casino, as well as the benefits the tribe says their project will bring to our region. On Green Scene, learn about a climate change pledge made by the European Union and a challenge issued to the United States. We'll have a wild story on livestock loose on a freeway in East County. Plus, we'll tell you about two local blood drives being held locally. Our newsmaker interview today is with Alejandro Deary, a Santee karate instructor who will tell us about Project Hero and how it's helping stop bullying in our schools. On Crime Beat, we'll have details on a shooting of a felony suspect in Alpine by law enforcement officers. Hear why Congressman Duncan Hunter wants to open up access in Ramona's Grasslands Preserve, and why some environmentalists are against that idea. On Destination East County, learn about some festive events coming up this weekend and throughout the month of March. And finally, today, we will replay our interview with Celtic harpist Christina Turin, who will tell you all about a worldwide convention of harp players and harp concerts in San Diego for St. Patrick's Day, and how a revival of folk harp music has its roots atop Mount Laguna right here in East County. Stay tuned for these stories and more on today's East County Magazine show, where East County matters. A middle school student has been arrested for posting an anonymous threat against El Cajon Valley High School on the phone app Burnbook Wednesday. After the threat was brought to the attention of school administrators early Wednesday morning, police presence on campus was heightened while an investigation ensued. Burnbook helped police to identify the poster, and an eighth grader at a nearby middle school was arrested. He was booked into juvenile hall on charges of making criminal threats. Police believe there was not any actual danger to anyone at the school, however. Burnbook is a phone application which allows subscribers to post seemingly anonymous comments as a form of social media. The app, popular among teenagers, has evolved into a method to spread rumors, engage in cyberbullying, and make threats to others. Some previous threats made from the Burnbook app have forced local schools to go into lockdown in recent days after Wednesday's incident. Grossmont Union High School District Superintendent Ralph Swenson announced that the district has blocked access to Burnbook on district media. He is asking help from parents and students to protect students' safety. In a message to parents and to district staff, the superintendent writes, "We are encouraging students to delete the Burnbook app." He urges parents to regularly review apps on students' phones, as well as photos, and to remind teens to guard their online reputations. The mobile app has caused serious disruption at high schools throughout San Diego County and nationwide, Swenson states. Those making threats may believe they can remain anonymous, but Superintendent Swenson warns, they are wrong and they will be made known. Burnbook has agreed to share IP addresses with law enforcement of users who post threats. Captain Davis with the El Cajon Police confirms Burnbook developers were fully cooperative with law enforcement during this investigation. All school threats are taken very seriously, Captain Davis says, adding anyone with information regarding threats to a school or to students is encouraged to immediately notify school staff, a school resource officer, or any police officer. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
An unseasonable heat wave is forecast for this weekend, sending daytime temperatures to record levels with very low humidity, according to Alexander Tardy at the National Weather Service. Temperatures are expected to reach the mid-90s in San Diego County's inland areas and well into the 80s for several hours each day on Friday through Monday in coastal areas. Heat stress is a concern in such warm weather, so organizers of outdoor events this weekend should be prepared to provide shade and water for hydration. Those planning strenuous work or high-intensity physical activities should dress accordingly, drink plenty of fluids, or try and schedule these activities during cooler parts of the day. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barrena.
This is Marilyn Lyons with a health report that may not be music to your ears. The World Health Organization, or WHO, reports that over a billion teenagers and young adults are at risk of losing their hearing. WHO studied listening habits of people aged 12 to 35 around the world and found that nearly 50% listen on personal audio devices at sound levels that can damage hearing, and about 40% are exposed to harmful levels of music and other sound at entertainment venues such as sports bars and nightclubs. Besides hearing loss, people can also suffer ringing in the ears. In about half of the people with hearing loss, the damage was avoidable, not tied to age, genetics, or disease. WHO has launched the Make Listening Safe initiative. It asks manufacturers to create audio safety features and teach consumers how to use them. WHO also suggests that parents, teachers, and doctors educate young people on safe listening habits and that entertainment venues set safe noise level limits, as well as offering earplugs and chill out rooms for customers. WHO is also urging governments to establish and enforce laws that would restrict noise in recreational venues. Here are a few tips to help save your hearing. Turn the volume down to 60% or less. Wear noise-canceling earbuds, or better yet, headphones. Take listening breaks or restrict listening to only an hour a day. Download a smartphone app to help measure safe listening levels. And finally, if you visit a loud bar, nightclub, concert, or sports event, use ear protection devices such as headphones to help save your hearing.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities. This is Leon Thompson with Tribal Beat on East County Magazine. Approximately 200 protesters held a flash mob demonstration in Jamul Saturday, wearing red as they voiced their continuing opposition to a casino under construction at the Jamul Indian Village. Excavation is completed at the project, site of a planned Hollywood-themed casino in conjunction with Penn National Gaming. Projected to open in mid-2016, the casino is expected to include a three-story gaming and entertainment facility of approximately 200,000 square feet, with gaming, restaurants, bars, and parking. The tribe estimates the project will create 2,500 construction and permanent jobs in the area. Opponents include Supervisor Diane Jacob, a Jamul resident, who has voiced concerns over traffic on Highway 94, the primary evacuation route during fires, as well as impacts on community character in this rural region. Glenn Rivall, president of the Jamul Action Committee, told the UT San Diego in January, "This is not about an Indian project." He claims that his group would oppose any commercial development of this size in this location by anyone, adding, "We do not believe it fits the character of the community, and are concerned that the traffic cannot be mitigated to the extent it does not exacerbate the challenges faced by emergency responders serving our community." Jamulians Against Casinos and Jamul Action Committee have filed multiple lawsuits, including one against Caltrans over traffic congestion and another in federal court that sought to claim the property was not eligible for gaming. All these suits thus far have failed. Protesters also voiced objection to the eviction several years ago of two tribal residents to make way for the casino. These two have become heroes to the protesters. Those tribal members, Walter Rosales and Karen Toggery, waged unsuccessful legal efforts to prevent their eviction. The couple claims he was tribal chairman and that she was tribal law judge. Their latest efforts to halt construction are claims that human remains and artifacts have been removed from the casino site and must be returned. The tribe reportedly offered them cash and replacement homes in an alternative location. The tribe has made efforts to accommodate community concerns, lowering the original height by 58% and height visible from the highway by 76%, also building an underground parking lot, reducing the footprint of the casino building, choosing earth tones and lighting designed to minimize visual impacts. The tribe has also funded a fire station and major roadway upgrades, including straightening and widening portions of Highway 94. In a press release issued by Penn Gaming, Hamul Tribal Chairman Raymond Hunter states, "We have worked tirelessly for well over a decade, listening to the voices of the community, addressing concerns, and ultimately developing a project that blends seamlessly into the region while creating approximately 2,500 much-needed construction and permanent jobs in our region. We look forward to continuing to be a good neighbor, as well as becoming a philanthropic leader and an active business partner in San Diego County." The late Native American journalist Roy Cook wrote several years ago about the impact a casino would have on lifting one of San Diego's poorest tribes out of poverty, noting that some residents at the Hamul Indian Village still lived in homes with dirt floors. Cook wrote on that day, "Hamul tribal land is 6 acres of uneven ground, uneven hopes and dreams mark the struggle to make a new future for Hamul. Looking across the dips and valleys of this federal reservation land, there are, over there, in the corners of our vision, we see the bright gems of hope and prosperity in the soil and dust that will support the basis of Hamul tribal future." On that day, as there was last Saturday, protesters surrounded the casino site. Roy Cook wrote this, "There is an irony to the day. Non-Indian ragtag protesters straggle along the Hamul reservation fence line. It is their First Amendment right to voice their opinions, but it causes one to wonder about all those homilies regarding Horatio Alger and America being the land of opportunity. All three past and present Hamul tribal chairmen are U.S. military combat veterans. We serve this nation for the freedom to be what we are. Indian nations ask for nothing more than the opportunity to succeed, but certainly nothing less. We support and defend the Constitution of the United States of America. America, America, we are still here. We are American Indian tribal people. We stand for this land. We bleed for this land. America, we have been to your schools and served in your military to defend the American way. It is our turn to step up to the economic scooter and take it for a spin. Hamul will have a casino soon, and all will benefit economically from this action." That was written 10 years ago. Protesters Saturday carried signs reading, "No casino, not now, not ever," and "Not anti-Indian, anti-casino," though one lawsuit challenges tribal sovereignty over the land. Dearhorn Valley Antlers editor wrote that two motocross bikers attempted to disrupt protesters by repeatedly riding close to them, spraying rocks, dirt, and gravel on those standing closest to the site. Opponents of the casino have launched a petition drive to collect signatures of casino opponents. Meanwhile, in a recent newsletter, the tribe reached out to local business community in East County seeking to form partnerships as the tribe aspires to make what Chairman Hunter has called a long-awaited dream become a reality.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Ed Barrena with the Green Scene Report. The European Union has sent the United Nations a pledge to cut greenhouse gas emissions by at least 40% by 2030, compared to emission levels in 1990. In a press briefing Friday, the European Union's Climate and Energy Commissioner Miguel Arias Cañete called on other countries, including the U.S., to follow suit. After a meeting of EU environment ministers in Brussels, Cañete said, "We expect China, the United States, and the other G20 countries in particular to follow the European Union and submit their contributions by the end of March." The news came months ahead of an international climate conference slated to start November 30th in Paris. The 40% reduction goal for European Union nations must be achieved domestically rather than through offsets that allow member states to buy into carbon-cutting schemes outside Europe, Reuters reports. The global spotlight is now on the United States, China, and other industrialized G20 nations to see what steps they will take toward reducing greenhouse gas emissions in a worldwide effort to stop climate change.
Whoa! Here's a wild news story out of Alpine. California Highway Patrol dispatchers started receiving calls at 1:15 in the morning Wednesday about several horses running wild. A rental car struck and killed one of the animals on Interstate 8 near Willows Road. The horse went through the windshield and rolled on top of the vehicle, smashing in the roof, 10 News reports. Fortunately, the driver was able to escape and was not seriously injured. A second horse was struck by a pickup truck on Alpine Boulevard west of Willows Road. The animal suffered serious injuries to a hind leg and was stitched up, but is expected to recover. It was taken to the county animal shelter in Bonita. The driver was not seriously injured. The wounded horse has now been reunited with its owner, who had been boarding the horse at a facility where an unsecured latch allowed the horses to escape. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is Ed Barrena with East County Magazine. I'm here today with Alejandro Deary, who is head instructor at the Deary Karate Studio in Santee. He is a black belt and also a scientist with a degree in biochemistry from UCSD. And we're just here today to talk about karate and how it can help young kids and people of all ages to avoid bullying and confrontations and things like that. So, Alejandro, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here and to be talking to everybody out there about our programs that we have and how can karate help kids and adults in life.
All right. So Alejandro, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background?
So I started in karate when I was about 6 years old. I spent all these years in practicing karate in different styles. When I went to college, I stopped karate for a little while, but after that, I came right back into karate and completed my training and got my black belt and decided to open my school to be able to help other kids and adults and learning self-defense and the great experience that that is.
So tell us a little bit about your science degree.
So I always was very interested on science and decided to pursue a degree in biochemistry because I wanted to work in the field and be able to help people by finding cures for the different diseases that are out there.
All right. Tell us a little more about yourself. You're from Mexico, right?
Yes, I'm from Mexico. That's where I grew up. And about in middle school and high school, that's when I moved to San Diego. And I love this place. And I decided to, growing here and having my kids, I have two daughters. They were born in San Diego. We love San Diego. It's a great place to live at. So now all the martial arts that I learned in Mexico, I decided to bring her over here to San Diego. And it has been a great experience. And quoting some of the parents, they really enjoy the experience that they're having at our studio there. They said it's like a family-oriented studio that everybody becomes really good friends and have a great time there together.
So. And your kids? Kids go to the studio, right?
Correct. Both of my daughters are students at my own studio, and my wife also is one of the instructors at the studio.
Very cool. I hear that you're beginning to work with local schools. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with that.
The main purpose of me going to schools and talking to these kids is to help them to confront bullying, right? Bullying is a big problem nowadays, and as a karate instructor, I feel the responsibility when I saw that the bullying was happening in a lot of our local schools to go out there and help the kids. So I've been doing this for 2 years and I've been getting very positive comments about when I go to those seminars and teach them what to do, to identify bullying, to know what to do, and to make sure that they know how to react or what to do after bullying has happened, right? Not just stopping it at the moment, but also to be able to react and look for the right help from the adults. And what happens when the adults are not helping right away, but they need to go and look for more help from other people?
Yeah, bullying is a big problem in this day and age. We hear about it all the time from online bullying and, you know, bullies in the classroom. And I know there's a lot of zero tolerance policies at local schools. So it's good to get a sort of proactive approach so that potential bullies and kids who potentially could be bullied will know about bullying and how to avoid it.
One of the projects that we're involved right now is we're actually looking forward to having more interaction with kids. We're always looking for ways to help more kids in our community. One of those is being Project Hero that we're getting involved with. We're just starting that program.
And Project Hero?
Project Hero, correct. And okay. That is a program to go help after school programs to help the kids and to teach them karate, how they need to be in activities, right? And reach out to more kids in the community and also teach them about anti-bullying and stuff like that. So that's one of the programs that we're very excited that we're looking forward to start. With Project Hero, we're looking to raise some funds to help the kids participate in tournaments, because some of the kids cannot, don't have the economy to go to tournaments and travel and pay for the hotel, pay for the tournaments. So with Project Hero, we're looking forward to help the kids pay for those kind of activities and help them out to develop them as students of karate too.
Yeah, I know you have a lot of trophies at your studio. Tell us a little bit about the tournaments and what goes into that.
So I've been participating in tournaments since I was a kid. A lot of the trophies that you see are from my family and myself. I'm still competing. It's a great activity. We enjoy a lot, and going to the tournaments is a great experience.
How often do you take your teams to tournament?
We go on a regular basis to tournaments, about once a month, sometimes more than that. There's always tournaments to go to. It's normal to go to one to two tournaments per month. And they are all over the place. We go to San Diego. A lot of the tournaments are in San Diego, some in LA area. Others are in San Francisco, Las Vegas, and some of the students go to Mexico to some of the tournaments over in Mexico. And we just came back from a tournament in Ontario, California. And that tournament is the national tournament. It's a great tournament. A lot of good competitors in the tournament. And we took 15 students to that tournament. We came back with 15 first places, one grand champion, about 15 second places, and a lot of third places too. And we had a great experience in this tournament. The kids, a lot of them, they not only won a trophy, but a lot of them gained a lot of great experience of knowing what it is like to be out there and compete against other people.
You have students of all ages in the tournaments, correct?
Yes. The students, I have a range from 5 years old to 45 years old students that go to tournaments. They're all very competitive, really good, and they have a great experience when they go to a tournament, so.
All right. So really karate can help anyone improve their life, not just young kids learning about bullying, but also really when you're older, you can learn a lot from taking karate as well.
Correct. This is not a sport that is age restricted. You can be a young kid and start to learn the very basics of karate to an adult where you just want to be doing an activity, an exercise, right? While you learn some really good techniques about martial arts and the self-defense. Self-defense is very important nowadays. There's a lot of people around us, so you want to be aware of your surroundings and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, self-defense is a big deal in this day and age, that's for sure. So once a kid starts working with you in karate, what kind of things can they expect to learn?
So every time that I get a kid that walks through the door in my studio, I immediately think about two things that I want to work with those kids. The number one and most important is to have them improve them as a person. We want them to improve their self-control, their self-confidence, and you also want them to focus more. That's kind of the main goal for when they come into the studio. But another one that's very important also is to have them improve their social skills. Right. A lot of the kids doesn't know how to function in society because they, a lot of the time they're by themselves. So when they come to karate studio, they will be involved in a lot of group activities. And a lot of those group activities are fun. And in order for them to be able to participate on those, they need to be well behaved and have control of themselves, right? So they know that to be able to participate in these activities, they need to be well behaved. So they learn to have good social skills and to behave as a group also.
Okay. And what's number two? What would number two?
So the number two is another skill that they learn that is going to be really good for them as they go on with their lives. And then out there, it's very competitive. And so what they learn is to get a competitive mindset, right? So for that, we take them to tournaments where they participate to be able to come back with a trophy, a good place in a tournament. But also there's kids that walk in and they are already very competitive, right? And for those kids, what we try to do is not to put the competitive mindset on them because they already have that, but to have the right attitude to competitiveness, right? So what we want to see is that those kids, when they win, that they don't have this, like, an arrogant attitude, that they have well control and they can celebrate, that they have the right attitude towards winning, right? And then if they lose, that they don't just, like, crying, right? That they have a good attitude also, and they think, okay, I need to practice more, and they improve themselves as a person too.
There's a lot of kids that are very competitive. I mean, being a father myself, I see my son out interacting. And of course, there's competitive kids every day in school and everything. So learning that gamesmanship and also that discipline that you talked about of being well behaved so that you can get rewards and benefits. I think those are good things to be instilling into the youth. So I think that karate has a lot of benefits for kids and for adults. And with that, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you for coming in today, Alejandro. You can check out his karate studio. It's called Deary Karate Studios in Santee. And look for Project Hero coming to a school near you. Thanks again for being here on East County Magazine.
Thank you.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The San Diego Blood Bank wants your blood to help save lives. The Blood Bank will be accepting donations this month at two locations in East County. The first blood drive will be held at El Cajon Valley High School on March 24th from 8:30 to 2 p.m. in the dance room. The second is at Soup Plantation's parking lot in La Mesa on Saturday, March 28th from 11 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. All donors are awarded a free meal pass coupon courtesy of Soup Plantation. Donors must be 17 or older, weigh at least 114 pounds, and be in good health. A good meal and plenty of fluids are recommended prior to blood donation. All donors must show photo identification. Donors are encouraged to schedule an appointment by calling 1-800-4-MY-SanDiegoBloodBank or 469-7322 or visit sandiegobloodbank.org.
This is Ed Barreno with a Crime Beat report. Agents from the San Diego Regional Fugitive Task Force were involved in a shooting Wednesday morning in Alpine. The agents were looking for a felony warrant suspect at 2157 Arnold Way. The warrant suspect entered a 2004 Ford Excursion and tried to flee, according to Lieutenant John Marion with the Sheriff's Homicide Detail, which is investigating the shooting. Lieutenant Marion said, fearing for their safety, the agents bailed out of their unmarked vehicle and four agents shot at the suspect, striking him several times in the upper body. The suspect was taken into custody and transported via ambulance to Sharp Memorial Hospital, where he was undergoing surgery. None of the agents were injured. UT San Diego reports that the agents who fired the shots were with state and federal agencies. Sheriff's deputies did not discharge their weapons. By some accounts, agents believe the suspect was trying to ram their vehicle. According to 10 News, witnesses reported hearing 10 to 15 gunshots. The suspect is a 25-year-old white male who had an active felony warrant for his arrest, as well as an open criminal investigation with the San Diego Police Department. The suspect was considered armed and dangerous. His name has not been released, nor have the names of the officers been made public.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. Should Ramona's Grasslands Preserve be opened up for more public access? Congressman Duncan Hunter's aide, Michael Harrison, said that more access should be a very high priority during a meeting of the Ramona Trails Association on March 3rd, the Ramona Sentinel reports. Hunter's office has been trying to persuade the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Agency to open up access in the old Survey 97 area. That's a trail that could connect the Ramona Grasslands Preserve to the San Pasqual Valley and ultimately the Coast to Crest Trail. The trail is currently closed to the public except for docent-led programs. But the Federal Wildlife Agency has voiced concerns over impacts on nesting golden eagles. The site is also home to bald eagles and endangered Stevens kangaroo rats. The county has done studies to monitor eagles in the area that it operates, hoping to persuade the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that more people using trails would not disturb the eagles. San Diego County had also planned to build additional new trails just north of the Ramona Airport, but those plans recently ran aground, halted after burrows occupied by an endangered kangaroo rat were discovered at the site.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes Tomato Mania, a healthy living fair, a desert art show, and St. Patrick's Day weekend festivities.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including the Ramona Music Festival, the Harpfest Harmonica Extravaganza, and Vallecito Day, bringing frontier times to life.
Stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine. The East County Youth Symphony Orchestra will perform a concert in collaboration with the Cuyamaca College String Orchestra and Choir on Friday, March 13th at 7:30 p.m. The concert will be held at the Cuyamaca College Performing Arts Theater in El Cajon.
San Pasqual Winery invites you to Friday with Frank Sinatra. featuring Sinatra-era music and sparkling drinks such as Bubbly Blonde and Classy But Sassy on Friday, March 13th from noon to 9 p.m. For details, you can visit SanPasqualWinery.com.
Tomato Mania, the world's largest heirloom tomato seedling sale, is coming to Cuyamaca College on March 14th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. This event showcases perhaps the most drought-tolerant vegetable of all with a collection of heirloom and hybrid tomatoes. You can also learn how to grow perfect tomatoes in two classes offered at 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. In addition, author Scott Dragry, author of Tomato Mania, will be on hand signing copies of his book. Admission to the Tomato Mania plant sale event is free. For more information, visit tomatomania.com.
St. Patrick's Day weekend festivities in East County are slated for Sunday, March 15th in downtown El Cajon on Main Street in Magnolia. Choose from a half marathon, a 5K run, or a green mile competition, the St. Patrick's Beer and Wine Festival. There's also a leprechaun challenge for racers dressed like leprechauns vying to win a costume contest. For full details, visit stpatricksdayhalf.com.
Desert artwork will be on display at the Circle of Art show in Borrego Springs on March 14th and 15th. This juried art show will showcase California's secret desert with exhibitions that include paintings, sculptures, weavings, jewelry, and photography. For details, visit circleofart.org.
The County of San Diego Health and Human Services Agency and partner agencies are hosting a free community health fair called Spring Into Healthy Living at the Cameron Family YMCA Santee on Wednesday, March 18th from 9 a.m. to 12 noon. Vendors and exhibitors will be offering free health screenings plus information on senior services, county programs, healthy lifestyle, decluttering, maximizing the brain, volunteer opportunities, and much more. Attendees may RSVP by calling the AARP reservation line at 1-877-926-8300.
You can meet the artists Vanessa Rusick and Sunbelt Publishers authors Philip Pride, Diana Lindsay, Jack Enos, and Nicholas Clapp, writers covering nature in our region. It's all part of a Going Native Spring Equinox celebration on Friday, March 20th from 6 to 9 p.m. at O'Don Fine Art in La Mesa. The evening of art and book signings also includes refreshments. For more information, visit odinfineart.com. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Take a trip back in time to life in the 1860s frontier during Vallecitos Day on Saturday, February 28th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Vallecitos County Park. This year's event focuses on cattle drives and cattle ranching along the Southern Overland Trail, with cattle ranching demonstrations as well as the arrival of trail riders on horseback. You can also visit with pioneer men and women in period attire, visit a mountain man camp, and hear historic talks. Visitors are encouraged to dress in frontier attire. Be sure to bring a picnic lunch since there's no food at the site. Vallecitos County Park is located in the Anza Borrego Desert on County Road S2 at mile marker 3435. For information, visit sdparks.org.
The Ramona Music Fest will be held March 28th in Ramona, featuring emerging talent and popular San Diego musicians playing everything from rock to reggae and from country to Americana. This all-day outdoor event benefits the Ramona Rotary and Kiwanis Clubs. The festival will be held at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center, also known as the Rodeo Fairgrounds, at the northeast end of downtown Ramona. For details, visit RamonaMusicFest.org.
The Easter Bunny train will be rolling out of the Campo Depot at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum on March 28th and 29th and on April 4th. This annual family event includes a ride aboard the vintage train and an Easter egg hunt. For details, visit psrm.org.
Santee Lakes invites the public to its annual extravaganza on April 4th. This community event features continuous egg hunts for children ages 8 and under, live entertainment, a petting zoo, pony rides, craft booths, and carnival rides. Brought to you by the City of Santee and the Padre Dam Municipal Water District. For full details, visit hop on over to santeelakes.com.
12 top bands will take stage at the 16th annual Spring Harp Fest a harmonica extravaganza at La Mesa's Harry Griffin Park on Saturday, April 4th from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. This will be an all-day harmonica music. The annual outdoor family-friendly musical tribute is a fundraiser to support children's music education in San Diego. Last year, the organization donated $3,000 of proceeds to the Blues Lovers United of San Diego's Blues in the Schools program to help pass the love of the harmonica onto the next generation. For a full lineup, see springharpfest.org. That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is Miriam Raftery with some important news for dog owners. California Senator Dianne Feinstein wants to know why the Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, has not taken action to halt the sale of Purina Beneful dog food. The products remain on the market despite numerous complaints and now a lawsuit claiming that thousands of dogs were sickened or died after eating the dry kibble food. Senator Feinstein also asks why most provisions of a pet food safety law passed by Congress back in 2008, that's 7 years ago, have still not been implemented. As we reported recently, the lawsuit claims that Nestle Purina Pet Care's Beneful dog food contains dangerous toxins, including an ingredient found in antifreeze. A dog owner who filed the class action suit contends that all three of his dogs fell ill after eating the food and one of them died. The suit claims that ailments tied to this dog food include internal bleeding, liver and kidney failure, vomiting, diarrhea, bloat, and weight loss, as well as death. Senator Feinstein, along with Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois, sent a letter to the FDA calling for an investigation. While their letter praised the FDA for establishing a database that's searchable by consumers and veterinarians, the senators also criticized the agency for turning a blind eye to numerous complaints. To put it frankly, the letter concludes, the food safety system Congress fought to develop has not been put in place by the FDA.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we have a real treat for you. My very special guest is Christina Turin. She is the director of the International Harp Therapy Program, the founder of the Rainbow of Sound Harp Circles, a music therapist. She also started PlayHarp.com and Angel Harps, which is a nonprofit. And she's here to tell us about some wonderful Irish Celtic harp concerts coming up here in San Diego County for St. Patrick's Day weekend, about some music therapy programs involving harps, and why Mount Laguna is the harp heaven of the world. Christina, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Miriam.
So, Christina, tell us about the St. Patrick's Weekend concerts that you have coming up.
It's very exciting. We have about 130 harp players from all over the world coming to San Diego for a conference on learning how to take music into hospitals and hospices and senior homes and schools. And we have two concerts that are going to be open to the public. The first one on Sunday, March 15th, is at 6:30 in the evening, and we're featuring six of the most world-famous harp players. There's Alfredo Ortiz, who's playing Paraguayan harp. There's Lynn Sorsha from Ireland, Dublin. She's going to play Irish harp, and we have a fiddle player, too.
Marvelous.
Esther Hackett. And we have a woman from Taiwan. We have a woman from Israel. We have a woman from Australia who's playing jazz harp. And I'm going to do some things with some friends on that concert. Now, the big concert that I really want to tell people about is on St. Patrick's Day, which is March 17th on a Tuesday night. We're doing it fairly early, and we hope that the families will bring their kids so that they can see harps. In fact, the children will have an opportunity to come up and play the harp.
What fun.
Bring your seniors. Go to the nursing homes and bring your seniors out. It's a very affordable concert for the whole family, and we will have over 100 harp players playing at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Mission Valley.
My goodness. And listeners, if you want to get more information or ticket details, you can go to playharp.com.
Right. There'll be a little green box there with shamrocks. So just click on that and you'll find out a lot more information.
That sounds wonderful. Now, Christina is a second-generation harpist, and she has quite an amazing bio. I'm just going to read a little bit of this. She began playing harp at the age of 4. She has music and education degrees from the University of Vermont, studied harp at the Mozarteum in Salzburg, Austria, and at McGill University in Montreal. She has also studied counseling and psychology. She has training as a music therapist from Arizona State University. She's an international recording and touring artist, a workshop organizer, and she's been instrumental in revival of the folk harp since the early 1970s. She also founded the Scottish Harp Society of America, and she's the founder and director of the International Harp Therapy Program, where she does healing with sound, working in hospitals and hospices. And in addition to all of that, she performed for 17 years with the Von Trapp family from The Sound of Music.
My gosh, I feel tired just hearing all that.
What was that like performing with the Von Trapps?
It was an experience never to be missed. The family was just amazing. The music is nothing really like what you would hear on the Sound of Music movie. Mm-hmm. That was made from Hollywood, but the music they sang was beautiful German leader type music, and the family was so gracious, and just going to work every night playing in the dining room. I remember specifically with Maria Von Trapp that she said to me one night, she said, "I want you to come here." And I thought, oh my gosh, is my dirndl too short, too low? And she was a very strict woman. And I went there and she goes, "What was that song you just played?" And I said, "Well, it's called In the Garden." She goes, "Go play it again." So I went to play it again, and she motioned for me to come over, and she says, "You see out there in the out the window?" She says, "Out there is in the garden, and my husband, the Baron Von Trapp, is buried out there, and someday I'm going to be there with him." So for 7 years, every single night for 6 nights a week, I would play that song for her.
Oh,
and then one night I came to work, and all of the Von Trapp children were sitting with Father Vossner at the table, and they said, "Mother's in a coma in the hospital. Could you play her song?"
Oh, my.
And I played it, and the chords were rippling up, rippling up. In fact, maybe one of these days, Miriam, you will play In the Garden off the CD that I gave to you.
I would love to do that.
And that's Maria's song. And right after I finished, I could just feel everything just ascending upwards. And the maitre d' came over, gave the telephone to Erica Von Trapp, and said, she came over and she said, "Mother just passed away and we need to go to the hospital." So I felt like I was playing her song right at the very end.
What a touching story. And listeners, I think this would be a good time for us to play a little excerpt of that song off of the CD. Thank you.
beautiful music. Now, Christina, what brought you to Mount Laguna of all places on Earth?
Well, I think it's the most beautiful place on Earth, actually. Back in the late 1960s, there was a man by the name of Roland Robinson, and we called him Robbie, and he's known as the folk harp founder, the father of the folk harp. There were no small harps in existence before he went down to Paraguay and found a Paraguayan harp. At the same time, I went to Scotland and I found the small Scottish harp. So between the two of us, we were really the initiators of the Renaissance of the folk harp. And he had many people come up to Mount Laguna to learn how to build harps.
Yeah, I understand. You've told me that Mount Laguna has a population of 81 people, a thriving metropolis up there. And out of those 81 people in this small town, 9 of them are harp players.
Well, not only harp players, but there are 9 harp businesses where they make harps. They make harp strings or have things to do with harps with animals. Sue Raymond was the person that got me out here. She could not come to one of our training centers in Vermont and Oregon and Florida, so she said, could you come out here?
How difficult is it to learn to play the harp?
Not very difficult at all. It's one of the easiest instruments to learn how to play. The big harp may be the hardest instrument of all because there's 21 places for your feet to be. But the little harp is very easy, and maybe I'll just give you a little strum on it.
Well, that would be fun. Let me give that a try.
Okay.
I'm going to give this a try. I've never touched one of these, folks. Quite up to your skill level, but it's a lot of fun, and it sure is beautiful music.
Beautiful. That is what we do with people in nursing homes and schools. We show them how easy it is to just make music, and I love seeing the faces light up with joy.
It must be a marvelous thing to do, and I know they're doing more and more research on music therapy and finding, for example, that with Alzheimer's patients, music has a way of reaching them and drawing them out of this dark place that they're in. Even when many of their other memories are gone, they can still remember and respond to music.
That's true. And especially they like to have music come in around 5 or 6 o'clock at night. It's called the sundowner syndrome. And the place in the brain where you hold music is a different place than where you hold language. So once the part of the brain that's being affected by the Alzheimer's disease is affected, the other part where they hold music is still active. And that's why it's so important to bring those songs, especially of the courtship years of their life. So if somebody is like 90 years old, you might play something from the 1920s, 30s probably at this point.
Yeah, that they would respond to and remember. Very good idea. Now, you have another organization called the Rainbow Girls. Tell us about that.
Well, it's not my organization, actually. What it is that we do things with certain groups of people in the community. And we have this delightful group of girls from El Cajon Lakeside come together, and they've had 6 lessons. And they're going to perform at our conference this weekend on Saturday morning. And they're all dressed up in different colors because they have 6 different colored harps. Actually, there's 8 of the girls. They are the girls of the Shriners and the Eastern Star organization. We do many different types of groups, summer camps for children with special needs, terminal illnesses. And we have these beautiful colored harps, and they've made these outrageous hats, and they've learned Irish music. And they are preparing to go off to Fresno to play for the Grand Assembly talent show to see if they can go to nationals and win by playing harps.
Wow, that sounds amazing. You also have an organization called Angel Harps, which is a nonprofit group. What's that all about?
Angel Harps is an organization where people can donate money to help put harps into the hands of children with special needs.
Nice.
And so we're very grateful to places like Kohl's and Target for doing that and helping mm-hmm. people open up their world to music and getting instruments in their hands.
And if people want to donate or find out more about Angel Harps, is that also at the playharp.com
yes.
site?
Yes, yeah, they can find that at playharp.com.
Very good. Now, you are holding a Celtic harp, is that correct, that you brought with us today?
Yeah, this is a small Celtic harp.
Beautiful. Tell us how the Celtic harp differs from regular harps that people might have seen on the concert stage and a little bit about its interesting history.
Okay. Very quickly, small harps were very popular in Ireland and Scotland around 900 AD, 1100. Harps actually went out of style because people were carrying political information from house to house, and it was the musician uh-huh. that after a while was deemed to be beheaded.
So they were the rabble-rousers of their day.
Yes. They would go and entertain, but at the same time they would give information.
Wow.
And so at one point the king said, anybody who plays the harp, you're going to be beheaded.
My goodness.
So it completely died out. In the 1600s, there was a revival of the old Irish music,
mm-hmm.
and those were harps got a little bit bigger, and they went away from the metal-strung harp. Then in the 1700s, you find the harps that you see in the orchestra today, and I have one, my mother's harp, the big gold concert harp mm-hmm. with all of the beautiful glistening, and they developed. It was only really in the late 60s and 70s that the small harp came back. There was a thread that stayed alive through a convent in Ireland,
mm-hmm.
and people like Derek Bell from the Chieftains, he was able to go to Mary O'Hara and get that harp and just say, let's revive this.
And the harp renaissance lives on today.
Oh, my
with
gosh.
With its roots right here on Mount Laguna in East County.
Absolutely, right here,
that
East County.
That is amazing. Amazing. I never knew that. Listeners, we have a treat for you now. We're going to play an excerpt off of Christina's album, which is called White Rose. And this is a medley of harp music, Irish tunes, all about roses. Thank you. Isn't that beautiful? Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been interviewing Christina Turin, who is with PlayHarp.com, an organization of harpists who've been fomenting a harp revival right here on Mount Laguna in East County. And we've been talking about all of their music therapy programs that they do, as well as some concerts coming up here in San Diego on St. Patrick's Day. Christina, I'd like to end with having you tell us about those concerts one more time for listeners who may have just tuned in.
Okay, I hope everybody marks their calendars. Sunday, March 15th, 6:30 to 8:30, great time of the day. Six world top harp players are going to perform at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Mission Valley. And then on Tuesday, March 17th, at 7 o'clock p.m., we're going to have over 100 harp players playing duets, ensembles. We'll have children come up and play. Invite your family, seniors. Go to playharp.com for more information, and we hope to see you there. And we will even be giving out a small harp.
My goodness. Well, that sounds like a marvelous way to spend St. Patrick's Day in San Diego. Christina, do you have any closing thoughts for our listeners today?
Yes, I think that in this world of all of the media and all of the things that we're bombarded with on a daily basis, to be able to sit down and create and make music is one of the biggest joys that anybody can find in their life. And if this is something that you think might speak to you, I really encourage you just to drop me a line at playharp.com and find out what kind of things are happening in this community here in East County in San Diego. Making music is joyful.
I want to thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, and we're going to end with a little bit more Irish music, listeners.
Thank you so much, Miriam, for having me.
And happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Kevin McLeod, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.